connecting sleep to sports isn't easy, but here goes. Mattress Firm is America's neighborhood mattress store, and it should be your goal to check out the deals they have going on every day. Their mattresses are softer than your rival team's defense. They get a 10 out of 10. You'll love your new bed. Okay, all terrible dad jokes aside, head to mattressfirm.com/podcast and stretch your budget further than a gymnast before a floor routine. NFL draft season is heating up, and we're unveiling the first show in our mock draft series. We're making the picks, but we're also talking Odell Beckham Jr., trade rumors, what would make sense, the pros and cons of Josh Allen, and how the Browns might not be in the kind of dire straits you think they're in. All that and so much more on the MMQB 10 Things Podcast. Hello and welcome to the MMQB 10 Things Podcast. I am Gary Gramley. He is Andy Benoit. Andy, we have officially cleansed ourselves of the free agency period, and we are ready to move on to the NFL draft.
Yep, it's that time. You know, the only complaint I have about the draft from a viewing process, and it's not about leading up to it, because this kind of stuff at this time of year is right in our wheelhouse. The draft gets worse as it goes along. The top pick, then the second pick, third pick. It doesn't build up to anything. It only disintegrates. And that's why it'll never be better than actual live games, where the score gets closer or more further apart, whatever it is. You go to the conclusion late at the end of it. In the draft, you almost begin with a bunch of little conclusions that diminish one another.
I think that's a very sharp observation. The one counter I'd have to that, by the time you get to the draft and the buildup is over, it's kind of anticlimactic who goes number one. We will probably know who the number one pick is going to be by, you know, whatever, the Tuesday before the draft, if not earlier. So
you think we will? I would say normally yes, but this year, because there are so many quarterbacks, which means so many teams in play to trade up, I would think it's in the Browns' best interest to not let that number one pick get out at all until they announce it.
Well, we'll see. I think
you want to bet on it. You want to bet on it? Let's bet on it.
Yeah. What's the day? And what was the bet we just made like two shows ago?
I don't. It doesn't matter. But I'm taking the side that we won't know the number one pick until the clock starts for the Browns. I think someone on.
Whoa,
I don't look at Twitter during the
no.
draft.
Andy,
yes,
that's crazy.
Yes.
Put the over at no. That's the end of it. That's like saying, you know, the Eagles are going to score 50 points on opening night. The over under
no,
will be
not.
Like 26.5 or something. So take a reasonable over under, and we'll do an over under. You're insane.
No,
you're throwing your money away.
No, I am not. The Browns are not going to let this get out. And listen, if it gets out that hey, they're taking Josh Allen, and then they take Josh Rosen, I won the bet. It's got to be the right name that gets out
yes.
before the clock starts. I don't think the name's getting out this year until the clock starts, until the Browns are on the clock. Then we'll learn at any point from there.
That's crazy. I think we'll know by the time we wake up on Wednesday morning. Whatever that is.
The draft
the 25th,
is, the draft
I think
is
it
Thursday.
Is,
but, so you're saying
yeah.
the day before the draft. Nope,
yep.
I'm taking my side, and I'm giving you 2-1 odds.
That's insane. You are the worst gambler ever. This is all crazy.
I'm gonna win.
All right. Bet made. So this is what we're gonna do this year. We did it 2 years ago. I don't think we did it last year, but we did it 2 years ago. This is going to be a mock draft series. The next 4 weeks, we will do 8 teams. Per show, we'll actually go 1 through 9 today because since the Browns obviously have 2 picks in the top 9, we're not going to project trades, but if trades happen over the course of the series, we'll acknowledge them and we'll adjust our board to an extent. But mostly we're going to be talking team needs. We're going to be talking some of the current status of players and rosters of these teams, and we'll talk a couple prospects for each team, and then we'll just assign them a pick at the end. It won't be terribly scientific, but I think we have a pretty good grasp on this thing between the two of us.
It's going to be fun, and I'm going to talk the need, and then you're going to throw the name of whoever might fit that need.
Yes. Yeah, and we're going to, you know, in our improvisational jazz type of way, we're going to touch on some other stuff too. But let's jump into it. Number one pick, that's the Cleveland Browns. it's going to be a quarterback. I know there was a sort of a wave for Saquon Barkley after the combine. I don't think that was ever really going to happen. I'd say with 99% certainty, this is going to be a quarterback going first overall. Now, Andy, you've watched these guys. We talked about what Hugh Jackson did with DeShone Kizer under center last year. Now, Jackson is saying publicly Tyrod Taylor is going to be their starter, and they're going to be disciplined in 2018, and Tyrod's going to be the starter for 16 games, and then they'll groom the guy behind him. I know you don't buy into that happening the wisdom in it.
That's irrelevant jargon, and not just coming from Hugh Jackson, coming from any, but they don't even know who the quarterback is right now. I mean, I guess they could theoretically because they have the number one pick, but that quarterback's never taken a practice snap with the Browns helmet on. So to say that Tyrod Taylor, who he's going to be our starter, that doesn't mean a single thing at all. The question is, who's the quarterback, right? Because you've already taken my role of saying what the need is, and now I have to take yours and try to say who's going to fill the need. And
there, well, I mean, they just traded Cody Kessler, so I think it's pretty clear they need a quarterback there in Cleveland.
Well, I guess. They have Kevin Hogan and Drew Stanton on the roster as well. The Browns are swimming in backup quarterbacks, especially if you're in my camp about what Tyrod Taylor really is. We've said last week, Josh Rosen's the quarterback I'm taking if I don't want to get fired. That's no kind of way to draft, of course. And so the QB I would take... I think Josh Allen's too big of a risk. I struggle with the inconsistent accuracy coming into the NFL because that's not likely to get better once you're in the pros. The question is, can you live with it? If you're a big arm thrower who can threaten everywhere on the field, can you live with being a 56% completion guy versus a 62%? If you're the coaches, can you live with that? That's a real question. Carolina has had success with Cam Newton. They've had some disappointments with him as well. But do you think, Gary, let's and I know this sounds like we're getting sidetracked, but this answer to this question may help bring clarity to other quarterback questions. If the Panthers had it to do over again, and that 2011 draft was loaded, so this makes it even harder to answer, do you think knowing what they know now, they would have taken Cam Newton number one overall? Has he been a satisfactory number one pick coming out of that draft for that team?
I think he has. And look, 2015, that would have been the 2016 Super Bowl. 2015 was, you know, the MVP season. Obviously, that was his ceiling. That's when everything was going right. That's when he was sort of as on point as he possibly could be as a starter. And you know, you look at a guy like Josh Allen, and you say, you know, if we sort of squeeze every bit of upside out of him as far as refining his accuracy, I think he could be that. I think he could be in that. You know, he doesn't have quite the same running value as Cam, although he has value as a runner. If you want to use him in that way, Wyoming didn't. I think if Josh Allen was in an offense like Cam was in college, going back to Auburn in 2011, with an offensive line like that and with a Gus Malzahn offense, I think he could have been a 1,000-yard rusher in college. But... you know, I think when you're talking about Allen, it's the amount of space, I guess you'd say, that it creates, that his arm creates, that his ability to throw off platform creates, just being able to threaten like that downfield, it opens things up enough that, you know, like you said, if he's a 58% passer, which is you know, maybe even almost optimistic at this point, I think that's a realistic, let's say, mid-level starting quarterback.
Mm-hmm. Well, and part of the reason Newton has a low completion percentage is they throw downfield more. They're not dinking and dunking, so that matters. But I think very few guys in the NFL have gotten stronger arms after they've entered the league. Drew Brees is one who did, and he's not like that anymore, but you've seen that. I can't think of anyone who's gotten noticeably more accurate once they come into the NFL. Not if we're talking high-level starting type of QBs. Maybe there's a young backup who's groomed, and you know, I mean, it can happen, I guess. I can't think, and send tweet us if we're wrong, at Andy_Benoit or at, what is yours? What is yours? It has an SI at the end of it. I should know your handle by now.
I know. I shouldn't have acknowledged Sports Illustrated in my Twitter handle, but this was this was the 2000 aughts, and people were doing crazy stuff like that. So, yeah, it's ggramling_SI. I throw this out, Andy, and it is different, but you go back a decade ago to the 2008 draft. A lot of people out there, a lot of statistically inclined people, and granted, the what would be considered advanced analytics in 2008 is not nearly what it is in 2018. I mean, that field has come leaps and bounds over that time, but there are a lot of people, numbers inclined people, saying Matt Ryan is not a quality starter. Brian Brohm is the guy to get. Look at Brian Brohm's completion percentage.
Yeah.
Not Matt Ryan. The issue with Matt Ryan, same thing you just mentioned with Cam, a lot of downfield throwing at BC, a lot of mediocre receiver play, and he ended up being, as I filibuster here, I will pull up his collegiate numbers, but a lot of people said, that guy's not accurate enough, give me Brian Brohm, give me Josh Johnson, Joe Flacco fell into the same camp. You know, a lot of people said, this guy's not a first-round pick. Now, Flacco, at this point, you might say, well, they were right about that, but I think he's had a nice career. I think the Ravens have to be satisfied with what they got out of their first-round quarterback back then. But
Ryan was 59.9% at BC, 59.9%.
Yeah. And, if I was running a college offense and I was trying to get quarterbacks and saying, I'll make you into an NFL passer, I think one thing I'd do, I'm not sure what you call them. That stupid little you line up in shotgun. It's the fly sweep, but the receiver cuts in front of the quarterback, so the quarterback just catches it and does that little in one motion, just two hands sort of
that, like,
just drop it to the guy.
Thing.
Geno Smith did it like
Brady did it like 80 times. Cooks.
Yes, yeah. Geno Smith did it like 80 times a game at West Virginia, but I would do that 3 times a game. Just to artificially pump up a completion percentage. If Wyoming did that with Josh Allen, he'd be at 60%, and this conversation would be a lot less about it. However, I fully realize Josh Allen is incredibly inaccurate. His footwork is almost comedically bad at some point. It looks like he is taking a Zumba class on the field, the way he's just sort of contorting his legs and his body when he's throwing the ball. But
and Matt Ryan was not and has never been a big armed guy. And I forgot it. I didn't know he was this low coming out. That's impressive. He got picked number 3 overall. I think that's where he got picked. Mm-hmm. And impressive that he's fulfilled those expectations. He's been worth that pick for them. He's been a franchise
absolutely.
QB. So I don't know. It's between Rosen, who I don't think they'll take. So now it's between Josh Allen and Sam Darnold. I'm not touching Baker Mayfield, at least not at number 1. And Lamar Jackson, way too many questions to be taken this high in the draft. Darnold's probably safer than Allen. I think I'd take Allen between the two. But, again, grain of salt here. I haven't seen a lot of Darnold. I know they can both – Allen's good at throwing on the move. That's the one thing we haven't mentioned yet. Cam Newton's not a good thrower on the move. He might make one here or there. Allen, you can build design movement as a passing concept, rollouts, bootlegs, what have you. You can build that into your offense and have that be a pretty viable weapon as well. So I guess I take the risk with Josh Allen. I guess I do that. That's why this draft is hard, though. There is no safe quarterback anywhere in this draft other than maybe Rosen, and there are people that don't think he's got the temperament to be an NFL QB or a great leader in that sense.
Yeah, and I'll just make one last point with Allen. Again, he's obviously boom or bust. I would probably, I don't think it's a bold call to say he's probably going to bust. I mean, he has accuracy problems. That is indeed tough to rectify at the next level. However, we talked about this a little bit last week. There's a lot of talk about, bad supporting cast, bad receivers at Wyoming, and then people will say, well, their drop rate was only this. when you have guys who can't separate, when you can't see anything open on the field because nothing has gotten open and you have no good options, that's ball placement does become an issue. There's no place to put the ball. I mean, you're basically trying to hammer the thing into a void. It's mentally a tough thing to overcome.
Yeah.
There wasn't really the opportunity to throw guys open. That affects accuracy.
To your point as well on the touch pass thing, there were throws that should have been caught that weren't caught. Not perfect throws, but throws that NFL receivers will absolutely catch. Wyoming's wide receivers were, I don't know who they are, but I watched a lot of their game. They're not very good. I mean, they were. He's not going to have that issue in the NFL. You're right. So there's that to consider as well. And here's the tiebreaker. But Darnold has the same tiebreaker as well. We have all these concerns about the passing. These guys have a running dimension to their game, and that can allow you to tread water a little longer than if you're just a traditional drop back statuesque pocket passer who has some mechanical issues. The mobility is a crutch that can help you while you develop as a passer in the NFL early on. We've said, though, the mobility cannot be your foundation, but it can be a valuable crutch early in your career.
Yeah, Rosen, you know, you said it with Rosen. I'm surprised Rosen isn't being connected to this pick more, because I do think he is. For a team that has needed stability at quarterback, as far as, you know, if you're going off the tape, if you're going off the skill set in college, Rosen probably is your most pro-ready guy.
Yep.
But if you're
most
also talking about sitting a guy for a
NFL-ish.
Year.
NFL-ish.
Yeah.
Yeah, but no, they don't do it because, well, let's just go to the Giants then, so we can remind everybody that nobody actually sits guys for a year anymore.
Okay. Do you want to let's pair these two together. We won't assign picks yet.
That sounds fine to me.
So we talked about this a little last week. You wrote about it for the MMQB last week. You say Giants can't take a quarterback here. Should not take a quarterback here.
Well, if there's one that they are sure about and absolutely love, I'm not going to fault a team for doing that. What I want to get across, the point I want to get across, is the idea right now is, well, the Giants, they're not going to draft this high again. They ought to take their quarterback now. That's the safe, responsible thing to do long term. And that's just not true. That's a huge gamble to take. You're talking gamble. It's already a gamble to take a quarterback, to take one and then try to figure out how you're going to use him 2 or 3 years from now, which is probably when Eli Manning stops playing. That's guesswork. You don't even know the landscape that he's going to be entering into in the NFL then. So I would not take a quarterback and then think that, oh, we're developing from the bench. No one's done it since Aaron Rodgers, and that's Green Bay had Brett Favre, different circumstances. It just doesn't go that way. First-round QBs don't sit and develop and become your long-term starter anymore. Doesn't mean it can't happen, but it's no kind of fallback plan. Let's put it that way. The Giants need an edge rusher, and they need a running back. And there are guys that fit that bill at the top of this draft. And 2 years ago, the Giants went 11-5 and won the NFC East. Why can't they figure in their minds, and you're Dave Gettleman, you're 67 years old, you went to the Super Bowl Carolina 3 years ago. Why can't you say, hey, I'm here to put this team over the top. We're better than our record last year, certainly. Give us Chubb, give us Barkley, let's get a dynamic difference maker, and let's go be that team we were in 2016. Why wouldn't he say that?
I'll throw up three variables here for you, Andy. Number one, how much do you think Eli Manning has left? And I know, I think we both agree, he has something left. You can win with him. You can compete for a Super Bowl with him at this point. Is that going to be the case 3 years from now or something like that? Number two is, what do you think of Davis Webb? We don't really know what to think of Davis Webb, but they should have a pretty good grip on Davis Webb, even with the coaching change. I mean, they should have a pretty good idea of what that guy is. And then number three is Odell Beckham Jr. If you are going to pay him the kind of, let's call it low-end quarterback money, the $20 million a year that he wants over the next 3 or 4 years, does it now make sense to move on from Eli Manning and get a cost-controlled rookie in there? So, you know, for all intents and purposes, you're now paying Odell Beckham like your quarterback, and you're paying your quarterback like you would have paid your low-end number one receiver.
Interesting.
Not that Beckham's a low-end number one receiver, but that would be the salary range for that quarterback.
Yeah, about $9.5 million a year or so for a QB if you take him high in the first round. Let's go on that one. The Manning one, I don't know how much he has left. I don't think he's lost any, though, so we're only guessing at that. There was no sign of physical diminishment on film, and he's never been injured. Davis Webb, I liked him coming out of Cal. I think coaches will like him because he views in the game and thinks the game like coaches do. It's whether he's a good enough passer, and then that gets into the scheme and how he fits. But he's not to be dismissed, and those guys would know more than we would, certainly. Beckham. That's the wild card, because if indeed they are going to trade Odell Beckham, that does shift the landscape considerably, because now they're not as ready to win now as they appeared, because they have absolutely no weapons on offense. When Beckham's in there, they not only have the Beckham weapon, but they get the benefit of how teams have to respond to that defensively, and everybody else becomes a better weapon. He's a transcendent talent. He changes whatever team he's on. He changes that entire team simply by being out there on the field. So if you remove that, now, I mean, who are they throwing and running the ball with? And if Beckham's not in there, what are you building your offense around? That changes it then. Then maybe you do look at this as a long-term rebuilding plan. I don't think they will trade Beckham. I wouldn't be shocked if they did, though, because the money's the other part. It's a hard conversation, Gary, because the money's the other part of it. And what you said, how much cap's he taken up? He's been a pain in the ass to deal with now. Guys typically don't get less painful in the ass when you make them super, super rich. They have no reason to grow up then. So I don't know. That's a hard one. And we could probably do a whole show on what happens with Odell Beckham. This is a standoff, and I don't know which direction it's going to go yet. I don't think Beckham's going to be he's not going to be wearing a Giants uniform anytime soon. He's either holding out or getting traded, and we'll probably be talking about this up to Labor Day.
Less painful in the ass. I think that's something we all hope for. I'll just say about Beckham, the market is so weird because the Giants, and I don't think they're going to trade him, because I think realistically you're asking for two number ones. And, you know, a lot of people are saying, oh, well, if you make the Rams trade, okay, you get that 23 this year, and you're probably going to get the 20-something next year. I mean, that's not much of a return for, you know, a player the caliber of Odell Beckham. By the same token, you're basically asking teams to give you two number ones and bring in this guy who they then have to devote a huge contract to. So it's almost like you're paying twice. You're paying double the price in some way for Beckham.
Yeah, you are. I don't think the Rams, and that's the team that's at the front of the Beckham trade talks, I don't think they mind that, though. Peter made a great point talking with their front office. Jared Goff is on his rookie deal, so the point you just made about Eli, and they in Los Angeles, they're thinking that, well, okay, he's on his rookie deal. That's our window. We can afford one or two extra superstars right now, and we're already ourselves an 11-5 type of team. So let's accelerate and go for this right now. Let's go make a Super Bowl run while the numbers are good. So I think the Rams would do this deal in a heartbeat if they could get Beckham.
Oh, I think so too. I think the Giants have a problem with that deal, because they're saying, well, we're going to get it's the 23rd pick this year. You assume the Rams are going to go to the playoffs again, so you're, you know, 20 something pick next year, and now you get two late first rounders for a guy, you know, one of the probably four or five non-quarterbacks in the league who you'd consider a true franchise player.
You know what I think you could do to twist the Rams' arm and get your way still? You say to Les Snead and Kevin Dimoff, their president, Les Snead's their GM, you say, all right, we'll do this deal for the first-round picks, but if those picks are below, say, pick number 22, then you add your second round pick as well. So let's say you go 12-4 in 2019, and you give us the 26th pick. Well, we also get the 26th pick in the second round. Because I think what the Rams would say to that, at first they'd say, oh, no, that's not too much. But then they'd sit and they'd go, oh, we, you know, if it's a good problem to have. If you're drafted in 26, means you got far in the playoffs, and mm-hmm. we believe we'll probably be drafting 31st or 32nd. Never avoid a good problem to have. All right, fine, we'll throw in the second. I bet the Rams would do that. I bet they'd bend on that one.
Yeah. Now you're thinking an NBA GM.
Does the league allow that? Does the NBA, why wouldn't they? I assume they allow.
I don't know. I mean, obviously in the NBA you get protections on picks. You know, we'll send you the pick if it's not a top three or whatever it might be. Nobody does that in the NFL. You get conditional picks moving back and forth. So I don't think it would be against the rules, but.
I would go for that. I'd conditionalize the pick where. I cover myself if I'm the Giants, and then you get as an insurance policy if you're wanting to trade Odell Beckham. I don't think I'd trade him, but again, I'm not there every day. All the stuff we hear about Beckham that's annoying, and to me, from a football standpoint, the on-field stuff's what's bad. It's the personal fouls, it's the tantrums on the sideline, it's the look-at-me stuff. That gets old. Smoking a blunt or whatever it looked like he was doing with a model in France, you know, you hate to see that publicly, but he's not the only guy that's doing that, and it hasn't hurt his performance. Yeah. All that on-field stuff, all that obnoxious, and we don't know this, most likely there's two or three times that much going on behind the scenes that never gets out there publicly. So we don't know how great of a headache he actually is. If he's only the headache he appears to be, I think I'm living with it and keeping him. If there's more to it, I understand it. There's no way for us to know. We'll probably learn at some point, though, because someone's going to have to look good and someone has to look bad in this. And the Giants would have every reason to leak the Beckham as a headache stuff if they decide indeed we are trading him. That'd be after the trade, of course. You don't want to do that before the trade.
Yeah, I don't think he moves. I will say one more thing about this. I think the Browns should be checking in on Odell Beckham. Throw this number 4 pick in there and see if you can get him. Ooh. You got his buddy Jarvis Landry there. You got plenty of cash to front load a deal. You sell it. Hey, who do you want your quarterback to be? We got our choice in any of these guys, and you'd have top rookie quarterback throwing to Beckham and Landry and Josh Gordon as long as he's around, and then you got some pieces to work with on defense, and suddenly you have a team that's ready to make some noise now.
Yeah, the Browns with Beckham would hate it. Well, he's going from New York to maybe L.A., and he's already an international star. He doesn't want to go to Cleveland, although all someone has to do is say, well, look at LeBron James. It can work out okay. But he would hate it at first.
I think he would warm up to the idea. I think you'd say, look at LeBron. I think you'd say you would be the savior of the Cleveland Browns franchise. Like no one's been able to do this. And on top of that, he's close with Jarvis Landry. They were close at LSU. So you got his buddy there already. They should get in on this. I don't know if they'd be able to convince him, but I think there's an angle to work there. And I think they have the picks that would satisfy the Giants with this, whereas the Rams maybe do not. But all that said, let's get back to the mock draft here.
We haven't made a pick yet.
All right, let's settle on the Browns now. Well,
that's going to be you. Aren't you the picker? I don't care.
Oh, I'm the picker. I'm giving them Darnold. I'll avoid the conversation with Rosen and the individuality he shows that people don't like. So we'll escape that. We will give them Sam Darnold. They won't take the risk with Josh Allen, and we'll move on to the Giants. And again, we're my thinking is if the Giants aren't taking a quarterback here, they have to deal out and collect a bunch of picks. I know everyone says Dave Gettleman doesn't do that, but Dave Gettleman will never be offered a package of picks like they would get for this number 2 pick. That said, we're not going to project trades in this exercise, so they are going to stay there. Andy, I think Bradley Chubb is a guy who he's not quite Myles Garrett as a physical specimen, but uh, you you can't get edge rushers like this. You can't get them. You have to draft them high, or you roll the dice on a developmental guy. They don't come onto the market in free agency. I know Saquon Barkley is a generational talent at running back, but I think Chubb is a guy who the drop off at what you're going to get at edge rusher is too steep, as opposed to, you know, top of the second round. You can get a you're not going to get Saquon Barkley, but you're going to get a quality running back if you want one then.
Well, okay, good. I like the Chubb. And then real quick, because we're got to get through nine picks and we're like 30 minutes in, I can tell. So real quick, though, if you could have is Chubb potentially a Von Miller level, would you say, who was also a number two pick in 2011, by the way, this year?
Not that style of player. I would say – I mean, look, I'd say no. I don't think he's a – physically, I don't think he's a mover like Von Miller. I don't think he's a pure I think you could call him an edge burner. I don't think you'd call him an edge burner to the extent that Von Miller is.
So production potential wise, let's throw style out of there, which matters.
Okay.
But let's just say who is he on his best day in the NFL? What type of level is he? I mean, he's help me out here. Is he certainly better than Ziggy Ansah, I imagine? Is he
yes.
as good as Houston?
I think his ceiling, you would put him, I'd say Justin Houston range. I think you'd put him right below that Von Miller, Khalil Mack tier.
Okay. So is he a poor Joey Bosa, Melvin Ingram, right in that, say?
Yeah. I think that's I think that's pretty good right there.
Would you take a Bosa / Ingram, or would you take a Todd Gurley / Ezekiel Elliott if we're to believe that Barkley can be a certain level of impact running back?
I think you take the edge rusher. I think there's no chance you can get the edge rusher in any other fashion. Edge rushers almost like quarterbacks as far as the difficulty of finding one.
Well, and here's the other part. I think Gurley solves this because we can debate how great Todd Gurley really is. It's hard to analyze because the Rams system helps him out so much. You can't do anything with your system to create opportunities for an edge rusher. I mean, you can get him home on some blitzes or twists or something, but from a down-to-down standpoint, the edge rusher has to win. He has to beat the tackle off the edge in order to be productive. The running back, if he wins on his own, tremendous, great, but you can do a little more to help him win. And Todd Gurley is super explosive, and the Rams get him in space by design, and then we see how super explosive he is. You could never do that for a D end. You can't give him a push start with your scheme.
Yeah. Yeah. Bradley Chubb, New York Giants. It's settled. Let's go on to the Jets. So, I mean, quarterback here. This is the pick they moved up from 6 to get 3 here. I guess it's just a question of stylistically. Do you want Allen? Do you want the big risk, the big arm guy? Is Mayfield more their type with who's OC there? Jeremy Bates now?
Yes. And we don't know a lot about Bates. I don't think he's been an OC in the NFL. He's been a quarterback's coach for a while, and he's been highly regarded. I don't know what kind of scheme he'll run, and he might not know until they figure out who the quarterback is, because that's the part. So we need to back up a little bit. We talked about Kirk Cousins a few weeks ago, and I said, I made the point, well, if the Jets really loved all the QBs in this draft, why did they go after Kirk Cousins, who costs 4 times as much money as those QBs? Would you really pay 4 times as much for a upper mid-level QB if you loved the rookies coming out? And one of their guys at Josh Allen's pro day approached me and said, I got a bone to pick with you. Yes, we do love those rookies. Just because we went after Kirk, it doesn't mean we don't love the rookies. And I said, well, you sure? I mean, I get you're saying that. The point he made, or the point that came to realization that we didn't account for when we had that first Kirk Cousins thought, is these rookies don't just cost $9 million a year, whatever their rookie salary will say. They also cost the 3 second-round picks that the Jets had to trade to get up to be in position to draft them. So it's, do you love the rookies or Cousins? But it's Cousins, at least you would have been able to keep your second-round picks. So just something to keep in mind. I still don't believe the Jets are – I believe the guy who went up to me – is being honest, and he's always been honest with me. I'm sure they like some of these guys. I think the Jets are in desperation get a quarterback mode, and they're trying anything they can, which maybe that's fine. Quarterbacks are important, but they're not going to get to choose their quarterback. There might be two of those guys off the board by the time the Jets pick. So yeah. To sit here and say, well, which one should they take? Who fits your style best? That's not going to be their call, which is why I'm skeptical of this whole thing and what they traded to move up, because technically, for this trade to make sense, they have to be in love with three of these quarterbacks, because two might be gone by the time they're picking. And how often is a team actually truly in love with three quarterbacks in the same draft?
Hypothetically, I wonder if they would have, you had mentioned in your column last week, obviously the cap space that they had available, and should you just spend it? I wonder if they had signed Cousins to a similar 3-year deal that he signed with the Vikings and sat at six, would they have still taken a quarterback anyway?
I asked him that. I said, so would Cousins – yeah, I said, well, so would – are you saying Cousins would have been a bridge guy if you love these QBs then and you got one at six? And he said, no, we would have built around Kirk. So we're using that six pick on someone else, and then we've got our second rounders to use on him.
Yep.
But all that's out the window because they basically are obligated to take a QB now. There's no other reason to trade up, and we've been hearing that Woody Johnson and his family, they want the franchise quarterback. There's pressure to do it. The problem is you can't just draft a guy and say, oh, he's our franchise quarterback. The guy actually has to be a good quarterback first, and yeah. I don't know if there are three quarterbacks that can fit that demand in this draft. That's highly unlikely.
They all have that ceiling, though. I guess you'd say that pretty much every year. Mm-hmm. I'm just trying to help out the Jets at this point.
Well, who have we given the Browns to again? This is my respect for mock drafts. I already forget what we've done two
We gave the Browns Darnold and the Giants.
Well, then just
Bradley
give the
Chubb,
Jets so. Allen. Then just give the Jets Josh Allen. It's a mock draft. That's who we think's the best quarterback after Darnold, isn't it? The Jets would go for broke. Would they take Rosen, the safer pick? Maybe. I guess maybe if they love Kirk Cousins.
Look, I think there's an argument with Baker Mayfield that he is the I don't want to say he's as safe as Rosen. I mean, you both have personality concerns with both of them. And the thought of dropping Baker Mayfield into New York tabloid world is worrisome, and Robert Klemko had a piece on Baker last week about how he is basically he uses this criticism as fuel all the time, and Joe Thomas kind of made the Robert had talked to Joe Thomas and Russell Wilson and Russell Wilson's mind coach is that what they call that dude, and Ryan Leaf as well, and they all kind of said like it's nothing but negativity. You're going to be just drowning in it because when you're in college, he was a Heisman winner in college. He was a hero in college. On top of that, no offense to people who, beat writers for college teams, they tend to be a little less cynical than NFL beat writers and NFL coverage overall. So,
right. Well, and as they should, those college guys are kids and they're, yes. The NFL guys are millionaires, professional millionaires for it. So that's appropriate for what comes with the territory. I don't believe you should be ripping college guys while they're in college. You can criticize them. You can be critical of their skills as they come out and talk about what they are. I think Baker Mayfield's going to have a tough time in the NFL, though, for what you're talking about. And the stuff I've heard, I'm sorry to do this. I'm not going to elaborate on it because it's all kind of hearsay, but it sounds like it's true hearsay. When you talk to some people within the NFL and you're kind of around the situations a little bit, I just doesn't smell right to me. I don't want it.
He's not going to be for everyone. I'll say that. I do think on the field, I think if you build the system around, again, what you can do with Josh Allen is you can basically, Josh Allen can essentially put the ball wherever you want it to go on the field. I mean, the velocity and the ability to get the ball downfield is unmatched in this group. Mayfield's arm is fine, I think. It's just not at that level. I think you have to, limitations is probably overstating it, but there are things you would design for Josh Allen that you certainly wouldn't design for Baker Mayfield, and probably vice versa as well. The same way we see what happened with Cam when they wanted to do more quick strike stuff. So I guess it's a fit issue on the field, and then off the field, it's, you know.
Yeah, and it's the off the field that has it has me concerned. The off the field stuff. On the field, he's also befuddling because his good plays are everything you want to see, and not just wow factor. I mean, they're quality NFL traits exhibited. And then his bad plays, you have no idea what you're looking at, and it's hard to believe it's the same guy when you put him side by side. He is just an up and down player, and his ups were very enticing, though, and his downs weren't common enough that you'd say he's inconsistent and erratic, but when he had downs, everything tended to fall apart from a discipline and fundamental standpoint.
All right. Well, let's go.
Who are you going at three? Did we do Baker Mayfield at three or Allen? What did we decide?
We did Allen. We're doing okay. Josh Allen at three. So the Jets take Josh Allen here. So Browns take Darnold, Giants take Bradley Chubb, and the Jets take Josh Allen, which in a moment we'll come back and get to the Cleveland Browns again. All right, Andy, before we move on with the next pick here, quick break. So here's the thing about hair loss. Whether we admit it or not, we all want that full, healthy head of hair. Unfortunately, once you start to notice the hair loss, it's already too late. If you're going to do something about that bald spot or that receding hairline, you have to go on the attack. Be proactive. Do something about it first. And that's where 4hims.com comes in. It's your one-stop shop for hair loss, skincare, and sexual wellness for men. No snake oil pills or gas station counter supplements. These are prescription solutions backed by science. It's convenient. No waiting room, no awkward doctor visits. Save hours by going to 4hims.com. All you have to do is answer a few quick questions. The doctor will review and prescribe you, and products are shipped directly to your door. It's so easy. And best of all, this stuff works. Right now, our listeners get a trial month of 4hims.com for just $5 right now while supplies last. See the website for full details, but this would cost hundreds if you went to the doctor or a pharmacy. Go to 4hims.com/things. That's FORHIMS.com/things. 4hims.com/things. All right, Andy, we are back in Cleveland, the Browns with the number four pick. Again, they could trade out of this. We are not going to project trades in this draft. Let's talk about non-quarterback needs, since they presumably would not draft a second quarterback at number one and number four. Defensively, I want to ask you specifically about one guy on this defense. That's Jabril Peppers. Because a year ago when he was coming out in the draft, we all kind of thought, he was a guy who played linebacker and safety in college. And it's kind of like, the hesitancy teams had with him in the lead up to the draft was, he's a safety. What exactly do we want him to do? What exactly does he do well? The Browns took him in the first round, and they decided what they wanted him to do was basically play with his heels on the goal line at all times and go from there. But
they did. They played him deep. Yeah, he did. As the season progressed, he became a deep center fielder for them. And the reason they did that, they've told me this, they felt like he was their best option at that spot. Now, that doesn't mean they felt like that spot was the best option for him. But they felt that was the safest way to use him. I was surprised that they did that, and I was surprised that that was their answer, because that's the least impactful position on the field by far. It's a security deposit, and those guys, those deep free safeties, might impact 6 to 12 plays a game depending on who they are and how the game goes. Peppers was very good as a blitzer early in the season. There's a dynamic element to him when he gets near the line of scrimmage and down in the box. That needs to be his role. And the debate is he a good enough player that you play him at his best spot regardless, and you live with the liability somewhere else? Or do you sacrifice a player that dynamic to ensure that you don't have the liability of free safety? And that's just a philosophical thing. The reason, by the way, the Browns played their safeties so deep, their thinking is they studied this. They said at the snap of the ball, most safeties are lined up 16 yards off the line of scrimmage. And at the snap, they retreat about 2 or 3 yards. They backpedal, and then they play defense from there.
Yeah.
So what we're going to do, let's just get rid of the backpedal. It's just wasted energy and wasted motion. And when you're backpedaling, you have to have transitional movement out of it. You're running backwards, and then you react to a route. Let's have them just start 2 or 3 yards extra deep and play everything downhill and keep it all in front of them. That was their reasoning. It's a Greg Williams philosophy. You could argue the merits of it and the detriments. I think logically it's pretty compelling, but the Browns did not look very good in pass defense a lot of the time last year. I thought they did too much stuff schematically. But anyway, that's why they use their safeties that way. I don't think they're going safety in the first round at number 4, though. What's got you intrigued about Peppers?
I was curious. No, I mean, Micah Fitzpatrick's on the board here. He's probably among the safest picks, and I think a lot of teams like the football character, the leadership skills, that sort of thing, and the fact that he's a versatile Nick Saban guy. Malcolm Jenkins is the comp that comes up a lot for him. What do they need? Browns, like we said, they need a quarterback. What else do they need? What's a pressing need here? Because obviously in our exercise here, Saquon Barkley's on the board. He is the top overall player in the draft. They just signed Carlos Hyde. They have Duke Johnson. It's almost like if you combined those guys, had them, get on each other's shoulders and play under a trench coat, you then have what Saquon Barkley would be as sort of the combination, three down guy, early down skill set and the ability to do the Le'Veon Bell thing as a pass catcher. But you're already invested in Hyde and Duke Johnson, so it's like, do you take a guy who makes those other two guys irrelevant?
You know what's fascinating to me? I think the Browns, when you take quarterback out of it, I think they're in position to take best player available, which is hard to imagine for a team that didn't win a game last year. But I've seen every snap the last 2 years, and I've never felt, 2 years ago, I felt the safeties were the reason they lost some of the games they did. They addressed that last year with Peppers, and Derek Kindred has gotten a little bit better, and now they've traded for Demarius Randall. So I don't think outside of the old safety position, which is no longer relevant to this discussion, I don't think they have a glaring weakness. There's nothing that teams killed them with last year other than their wide receivers are not very mature from a football standpoint. They've traded for Jarvis Landry. They probably believe they'll have the most stable Josh Gordon that they've had in maybe ever. Mm-hmm. He's going to be here for the offseason, it looks like, and he's slated to play, and he has played, and they can reason that Corey Coleman will get better entering his third year. They can reason that. I don't know if I'd bank on that. So even wide receiver, which was a problem last year, is not really on paper a glaring issue. I'm taking the best player available if I'm the Browns, and if I have to pick a position for the purposes of our mock draft, I'm taking the best pass rusher available because you can never have too many of those. They are a little bit weaker inside than they were a year ago. And Myles Garrett's their only true difference maker in and of himself. I don't know how good the pass rushing depth is. Even defensive tackle would be fine to me, but that's not mandatory. It's best player available in my mind.
All right. Yeah, I was going to say, obviously Chubb is off the board in our exercise here, but if it goes 1, 2, 3 quarterbacks in this draft and they're looking at Barkley and Chubb, I thought the Browns should take Chubb and you pair Chubb and Garrett,
and
now you have something going. Do you just want to give him Saquon Barkley for the sake of proclaiming best player available to the Browns?
For the Saquon of proclaiming best player available?
Nice! Yep. Yes!
I guess we can do that. We can. They signed Carlos Hyde, and they've got Duke Johnson. I don't know if that'd be the ultimate luxury pick. It would be very luxurious.
It would.
Now they're 3 deep at running back.
They have a ton of pay. You're probably not to. I mean, Calvin Ridley's the best receiver in this draft. That's a bit of a reach at 4. Again, that they could very easily trade out of this pick with the big 4 quarterbacks.
I would do that.
I'd
do that. But we're not forecasting trades. All right, Saquon Barkley.
We're not.
Sounds
Saquon
good.
Barkley to the Browns at number 4 here, which brings us to the Broncos. And like we said on the free agency show, Case Keenum certainly does not preclude the Broncos from taking a quarterback here. As a matter of fact, I would consider them more likely than not if the guy they like is still on the board at five.
If the guy they like is still on the board, is Josh Rosen on our board?
Josh Rosen, yeah, he's on our board.
I give him Josh Rosen then. I agree with what you're saying. If it's Baker Mayfield, though, they had Baker Mayfield at the Senior Bowl, and that did not go very well. No one's reported about it. I can guarantee you that did not go very well. And if they took Baker Mayfield after having him in the Senior Bowl and how that went down, that would really, really raise my eyebrows. That would show a big disconnect between a lot of people in that organization.
Do you think they're smoke screening, Andy? They could be smoke screening either way. They're smoke screening you, or they're going out there. John Elway's stalking Baker Mayfield. And what else does John Elway have to do this time of year? You fly around.
I know they're not. I don't think they're smoke screening. I guarantee you they're not. I can tell you why. Isn't this mysterious how I'm being right now? I just don't want to be a rumor mongerer.
Yeah.
But I don't think they're taking Baker Mayfield. I'll put it
you
that
didn't
way.
Think there were warm and fuzzy feelings after the week at Super Bowl, Senior Bowl.
There shouldn't be. There shouldn't have been.
So let's give him Josh Rosen. They have the two quarterbacks. If Case Keenum turns out to be the real deal, what we saw last year, then they have they just went from having zero viable quarterbacks to two viable quarterbacks, and they can deal with that next offseason.
Do you think it's possible? Would they consider trading up to get Saquon Barkley, moving up one spot to the Browns?
It's possible. I don't know. I don't know if anyone has the appetite to come up for a running back, even a running back this good. There's so many good running backs coming out of college football right now.
They've got Case Keenum. And part of the reason they signed him is because they feel like their defense still makes them competitive. So they're probably thinking, how can we get to 10-6? And then, well, if we're good enough to be 10-6, hey, how do we get to 12-4? I mean, that's how they should be thinking. This is not a horrendous team. This team has some weapons. It has some talent. The O-line's getting better. So if you've got Keenum, you know you need to have dynamic guys around him. Barkley would certainly be that. He could certainly change the face of your offense. And you're not hurting a lot of other spots. Remember, they still have Paxton Lynch. And I know, he looks like he's flamed out. Well, they knew it would take him a while to develop anyway. He was never supposed to play as a rookie. And so we've only evaluated Paxton Lynch for 1 year. That was last season. And the people within the Broncos organization feel that last season the offense was corrupted by a bad scheme run by Mike McCoy. I don't know if that's true or not, but that's how the Broncos feel. It's why they fired McCoy and replaced him with Bill Musgrave. So they had Paxton Lynch, who they knew wouldn't play the first year, and was in and out of lineup and not healthy for a lot of his second year, and then was cobbled between a couple of different schemes. They really have not seen Paxton Lynch. You could say, what are they going off of if they're saying it's time to rule out Paxton Lynch? It's too early for that. And they've got Case Keenum here. They signed him to be the placeholder and have some weapons around him. What's to say? Why is it a consensus that they're taking a QB at number five?
I think they are unwise considering this will again, it's Paxton Lynch. It's going to be what is his third offensive coordinator in a little more than three seasons now. I think they've kind of they fried him. I mean, he does not look like he has really made any sort of progression. He was supposed to push Trevor Siemian last summer, and that did not happen.
Yeah, you're right. That's the only red flag. It's a big one. He didn't win the quarterback competition against the equally young, less talented guy. You're right. That's an enormous red flag. That's the only red flag. You can't fault him for the injuries. You can't count his rookie year because he wasn't supposed to play.
I agree with that. And I love him as a physical talent. I think it's too late. I think he was such a project coming out of Memphis, and I think he needed stability early on. And I think at this point, it's almost like, I think optimistically you would kind of say, well, you know, he's sort of back to where he was coming out of college. So now we're looking at a 2-year timetable. And he's, you know, he's probably even a bigger risk at this point than he was coming out of Memphis. But
yeah.
I don't think they can trust him. And then it's, you know, the question of how much do you trust Case Keenum? I don't know how much they trust him either.
Well, they trust him more than Simeon. We know that. So do you want to go Josh Rosen, number 5, then?
I'll give him Josh Rosen. Are there any other, when you look at the team, Quentin Nelson obviously is a tremendous guard prospect on the board. I think he's a consideration for them, considering they just haven't been able to get right up front with that offensive line.
Yeah, they could go guard. I'd be fine with that. They do have they're thin at that. Ronald Leary's fine on the left side. Max Garcia's been okay as a fill-in guy, but yeah, if they want to go guard, if they are high on Nelson, that's I'm fine with that too.
The last thing I'll just ask you real quick: Aqib Talib is obviously gone. Chris Harris, Bradley Roby, do they worry about cornerback depth? Do they have that number 3 corner there, or you know, is it a possibility to try and get the band back together, so to say, and find a Talib type to join that group?
I would imagine they have plans of signing Bradley Roby long term, and Harris is on the roster and he's mm-hmm. cemented there. And they drafted Brendan Langley in the 3rd round a year ago, which leads me to believe that's how they've addressed that position. I think that's what Langley was picked for.
Okay. All right. Well, we're giving the Broncos Josh Rosen here. Okay, before we move on, Andy, you know, back to Mattress Firm. Let's keep the ball rolling, shall we? Everyone knows how important stretching is before an event. So does Mattress Firm, except it's your dollar. Your budget stretches further when you're shopping at America's Neighborhood Mattress Store. It's a true home run, and you'll have a ball. They're the head coaches when it comes to mattress expertise, but know this, they are more than mattress experts. They have a game plan that helps you transform your mattress into a bed. From adjustable bases and sheets to headboards and bedroom decor, they have you literally and figuratively covered up like your favorite cornerback. Go to mattressfirm.com/podcast to see what deals are happening as I read this sentence to you. They even offer you a 120-night sleep trial to ensure perfection and a 120-night low price guarantee, so you know you paid the perfect price. Talk about a 1-2 punch, a knockout, if you will. Score big with a perfect bed. Head to mattressfirm.com/podcast to get the play-by-play on how you can monumentally improve your sleep today, tonight, and tomorrow. Which brings us to the Colts, traded out of the 3rd spot already. They're down to 6th. They picked up a bunch of second rounders in the process. Andrew Luck looks like he's going to come back next year, and like we've said a couple times over the course of the last couple months, they have a pretty good situation with Jacoby Brissett. He'd be a nice starting candidate for a lot of teams, but obviously once Luck is back, they have a star quarterback, assuming he is at or near full health. Defense still very much a work in progress, and what do they have up front on the offensive line at this point, Andy?
Well, their O-line's never been as bad as people think. They've been investing in it for a few years, and it's starting to pay off. They have Jack mm-hmm. Muhert at left guard. I like Joe Haig at right guard, but they did sign Matt Slauson as well, a veteran who you can tread water with him because he's been around long enough. He's got to have the right people around him. Ryan Kelly at center, he has excellent strength for that guy, a guy at that position. Anthony Costanzo's a decent left tackle. Right tackle's a little bit of a turnstile. Denzel Good needs to get better there. Joe Haig can also play at that spot. If there's a lineman they love, I guess that's fine. But here, the defense, we can be quick on this one, Gary, because it's mm-hmm. best defensive player available on their board. Because here are the guys, I'm looking at their depth chart now, the guys who are clearly quality 3-down players on their defense. It would be Malik Hooker, and we're assuming he fulfills his promise. He got hurt for half his rookie year. I think Quincy Wilson, their second-round corner from last season, can be that, but we don't know that yet either. But let's put him in there because he's young and he's going to have a spot. Mm-hmm. And probably John Simon. And Jabal Sheard, he's not a true third-down guy, but he's so good and he's so dominant on first and second down. Let's include him. That's 4 guys. They have 4 three down players defensively. Everybody else is a backup that's forced to start, a rotational guy that has to have a very specific role. They've got nothing defensively. And coordinator Matt Eberflus is going to run a Rod Marinelli type of scheme. Mm-hmm. So 4-3 with an emphasis on zone and a four-man rush. Go out and find the best 4-3 defensive player you can, and then probably do that again in the next couple of picks you have too.
I'll throw out three names. You got Fitzpatrick. You got the Malcolm Jenkins, let's call him clone for shorthand here. Roquan Smith, undersized linebacker from Georgia. It might be a guy who ends up playing on the weak side, but I think he's Deion Jones at sort of worst, and I think he's, you know, in college he was almost like an undersized Luke Kuechly, the way he was diagnosing and getting to spots so quickly. And the other guy I throw out there is boomer bust edge rusher in Marcus Davenport, who's probably, Harold Landry too, but you got a couple of edge rushers who are maybe a year away from a big impact, but are certainly very high ceiling guys.
I think they do go whoever they feel is best, and probably high ceiling is what you look at because you have so many needs. Of their weak positions defensively, linebacker's the one that's absolutely killing them. The guys they have now are probably third string type players that are forced to start in there. And Antonio Morrison's the guy most people know. So if they want to correct for now, go linebacker. But again, they are in such dire straits here, they really can't go wrong at any position.
All right, let's give him Roquan Smith. Let's give him the Georgia linebacker. Bucks. The Bucks, you know, we said last year, they needed edge rusher help. They went out, they got Jason Pierre-Paul, maybe not the dynamic edge rusher anymore, but Vinny Curry, a favorite of ours who's joining that pass rush. So you pair Curry with Gerald McCoy and Pierre-Paul, you got something up front now. So you'd think they've addressed that pretty well at this point.
They have. If there's someone that they love as well, I wouldn't hesitate to do that. Noah Spence is coming back healthy, so they probably – yeah, they're not bad at pass rush now. They're not great, but they're not bad, and that they were really bad last year. That's why they didn't have a good season. That was the root of all their problems. Secondary needs some help. They're mediocre at safety outside of Justin Evans. They're not even mediocre. They're subpar with Chris Conte and Keith Tandy there. So if they have a safety they love, maybe Derwin James, who was nearby, I know. Brent Grimes, they re-signed him for a lot more money than I would have guessed. I thought he kind of hit the wall last year. They clearly feel he's got at least another season left, but if they want to go corner, they could do that. Yeah, it's also a security deposit for Hargreaves, who's been up and down.
Brent Grimes is never going to die. I love that guy.
I know. I thought he was done 5 years. He's in that Jason Witten, Terrell Suggs, never going to age class because I thought he was done 5 years ago, and he just hasn't been.
He's going to get another contract. He's going to play till he's like 46 years old. I'll say this. I think we'll probably end up giving him Minka Fitzpatrick at this spot for the sake of our exercise. The thing that's always bugged me about their cornerbacks, even if you're going to be, and I think there's no reason to be bullish on Hargreaves, but if you were, they're just so small. They're so small at cornerback, and you're in a division with Michael Thomas, Julio Jones. The Panthers got smaller at receiver, but you know, Funchess, they had Benjamin there for a while, and it just always drove me nuts seeing these like 5'9", 5'10" guys trying to match up with these monsters at receiver. So it always bugged me that they never found the big cornerback to pair with the smaller guys. But
I think that's a fair point. They're a very zone oriented defense. So in their mind, they probably aren't they're not truly matching up on any of those big receivers, but shoot, the corners are still the guys at the simplest level. They're the ones who guard the receivers, whatever your scheme might be, man or zone. So I hear you on that. It is odd that they're so small at the corner position.
Like I said, we'll give them Fitzpatrick for the sake of this exercise. But I do want to throw out one more name, and he'd be a dark horse here, and we're going to talk about him probably later in this process, though. But he's been fascinating to me because I've been putting together the MMQB big board over the past couple months, and you know, I do it on my own assessment, but more than anything, I'm trying to get as much intel as possible from our people who are out in the field. Josh Jackson, the Iowa cornerback, who is he's long. He's not super long. I think he measured at like 6'1" at the combine, and fairly long arms. Big time ball skills guy, breakout player last year. I had one person come back to me and say, "Oh my goodness, Josh Jackson, this guy's you." I think I had him at like 20, and it was, "You got Josh Jackson too low. Everyone's buzzing about him. You got to move him way up." And I had another person come back and say, like, "Ah, Josh Jackson, I don't even know if he'll go first round." So I think we settled on Josh Jackson at like 13 or something like that. But he's a fascinating guy. Long speed's a little bit questionable, but big time ball skills, big time. You know, when he has his eyes on the backfield, sort of a turnover machine out there. But I would call him a dark horse at number 7 here. But
all right, like I said, like it. I like the logic behind it. Yeah.
For this, we are going to make it Minkah Fitzpatrick and move on to the Bears, who finally they got some pass catchers there, so they're getting something going.
Well, they had nothing. It was hard to play last year. They had nothing at wide receiver. It's hard to evaluate guys. It's hard to draw up designs. They have Allen Robinson now, Taylor Gabriel, Cameron Meredith is healthy, and Kevin White, boy, if he ever gets healthy, first-round pick in 2015, I don't think you count on him at all, though. Different look because of that, absolutely. That offense, really, with those receivers now, and Trey Burton at tight end, that offense has no needs.
Yeah. And you know, we talked about
the O-line's decent.
Sitting out. Would you consider solidifying that that other guard spot?
You might. Cody Whitehair has played guard and center for him, and then they have Hieronymus Grasu, their third-round pick in 2015. And most likely, if he were really a player, he would have found his way into the lineup by now. But they've got some young interior guys that they can get by with. And of course, Kyle Long's the right guard. If they love the guard in this draft,
Quentin Nelson, the Notre Dame guy, yeah.
I mean, if they love Nelson, then sure, because the other part is Mitchell Trubisky, he's going to be a better form of Kirk Cousins if all goes well, and you can win with that. That's a compliment. He's a timing and rhythm passer, though, so he has to play within the context of an offense. He's not going to be Carson Wentz, where he can create the context of the offense just by being who he is. He's got to run a system, and so he's got to be protected and have a running game that's going to help immensely. And if Quentin Nelson's positive for that, if that's important to him, then I can go that direction. I think their most apparent need overall would be on defense and at the linebacker position, linebacker.
Yeah, I mean, you got a guy in Tremaine Edmonds who's a little bit raw, really, absurd athletic talent, a long. Fast guy, did some edge rushing at Virginia Tech. They use him in a variety of ways. So you might, and I don't know exactly what you want to do with him at the next level. KJ Wright is a comp that's been thrown around, but he's certainly he'd be an option at this point. But I think it would come down to him, or do you get the guard? You know, Nelson is a guy. Albert Breer had talked to someone in the league who said he's not better than Zach Martin right now, obviously, but he's a better prospect than Zach Martin was coming out of Notre Dame back in 2014. So you know, you're talking about I don't want to say safer pick, because we talked about that last week on the Mailbag show, and how maybe that's not always the case, but you would think you'd feel pretty good about plugging him in and going.
They just hired Matt Nagy, and if they believe they can form a dominant offensive line, then they might see themselves as a team that can win games by outscoring people. I mean, they might think we're one extra piece away offensively from scoring 28 points a game and going 9-7, 11-5, somewhere in there.
All right. I'm going to give him Quentin Nelson, if that's okay with you.
All right. Yep, fine with it.
All right, we got one more pick to go here. But first, quick announcement. We're desperate for help. We're not desperate for help, but we're looking for help.
We're close to desperate. We're close.
We're always kind of desperate. I mean, we're people who kind of struggle through life overall. But, yeah, we could use some help. I'll put it that way.
We could, because we mentioned last week the podcast manager. We'll probably have a few different roles for this. Not a huge team, but we might need more than one. And it's we're looking for someone who wants to build their resume, volunteer type of thing with growing our podcast, and someone who understands the podcast landscape, social media, has creative ideas for how to expand and grow the show and then put it into action as well. It's not grunt labor, as we said. This would be an initiative type of gig, someone with the expertise and the willingness and eagerness to learn about it. Football knowledge helps. Technical knowledge would help quite a bit, and certainly an understanding of the media landscape. And if you want to do that and you're interested in it, email me at andybenoitnfl@gmail.com.
Very good, Andy. All right, last team of part one of our series here. This is the 49ers. Obviously, team on the rise. Lots of excitement there. They have their quarterback. What should they be looking at next? And I want to ask you specifically, what's going on with the – how do you feel about the defensive line? Because we kind of talked about this last year when they took Solomon Thomas. I mean, they have three really good talents up there, but it seems like they're fairly redundant.
Because all three of those guys, Eric Armstead, DeForest Buckner, and Solomon Thomas, and that was their first-round pick each of the last 3 years. Armstead was 15, Buckner was 2016, Thomas 2017. They're all kind of interior pass rushers. I like them. I like them a lot. I think Buckner got a lot better last season. And Thomas, yep. Thomas had a tough transition in the NFL, but not in a way where you think he can't play. His skills and talent were evident on film. They just need to be applied effectively, and that's natural rookie development stuff. So I'm not at all worried about Solomon Thomas. And Armstead, if he's healthy, he's a viable piece. They can play in a lot of different spots, those guys. There is some redundancy. I'm fine with it, though. Talent trumps redundancy in this case.
Would you look at that just from a roster building standpoint? Would you look at it and say, you know, we need some speed on the outside? I mean, you have a couple of pure speed edge burners at this point. Bit of a project again. The Marcus Davenport, the UTSA guy, and Harold Landry out of Boston College, who I think is being very underrated in this draft class. But is that the kind of talent you might look at and say that's what we want as a complement to those to that trio?
If there's a true edge rusher you love, and it would have to be that because these guys have the interior of the D-line pretty well taken care of. And we're talking more from a pass rushing standpoint, but that's really what you're talking about when you talk D-line in the first round anyway. If there's a true edge guy they love, and Robert Saleh, their defensive coordinator, looks at it and says, hey, I just saw what my former Jaguars defense has done. Let's get richer at that position. That'd be pretty cool. I could see that being really enticing for him. The other part, I don't know, or how good is the wide receiver class in this draft, Gary? Because they really haven't addressed that position offensively, and they are okay if everything goes well. But they need, at some point, they're going to need a wide receiver to define the passing game around Jimmy Garoppolo.
It's not a good group. It's not a good receiver group this year. Calvin Ridley, I think is the consensus number one. He's a smaller guy. He's a quicker guy. I think he's a little bit too similar to what you have in Marquise Goodwin. I think he's a better version of Marquise Goodwin, but, you know, if we're talking shorthand here, he kind of brings the same type of thing. If you're looking for that, sort of big-bodied compliment, you'd probably be looking Cortland Sutton, who's more of a big physical contested catch type of guy. He's, you know, if you were if you were ranking the prospects, he's a guy you'd have in, you know, we optimistically ranked him at 25 or 24 or something like that, but that's we have him on the high side. I think a lot of people consider him a fringe first-round talent.
Okay. So it's probably defense and defensive linemen. I mean, I'm looking at their offense. You know, Joe Staley's going to need replaced at some point. Could you find someone who could play at guard for a little while and then move out to tackle? I don't know how they feel about Laken Tomlinson, who they traded for from Detroit. Mm-hmm. He was a first-round pick a few years ago. You see it every once in a while, the flash of why he was a first-rounder, but you by no means see it on every snap. They're probably in a position to take best player available as well here, Gary. That's the benefit of having a quarterback. That gets to why these guys are important, because it's not just that you have the guy who touches the ball and runs the offense every play. It also opens up the way you can build the rest of your roster. You become less scheme dependent, so you don't need certain types of players at certain types of positions, and you become more. You can go for talent more and bend the talent to what you want it to be, because your quarterback is what identifies you, not necessarily purely your scheme. And in San Francisco's case, they have the best of both worlds, because they have the quarterback they believe in and a really well-defined, flexible, dimensional scheme that go around on both sides of the ball. They're clearly a Jacksonville-style scheme defensively, and then Kyle Shanahan's trailblazer in a lot of things he does offensively.
We will not give them Baker Mayfield, and we won't give them another defensive tackle. So the names I throw out, you got Denzel Ward, who is a small but very quick and physical and a good jumper. So he plays a little bit bigger than his size. I think he's like 5'10", 5'11". He's the Ohio State corner. The big guy, the bigger corner, Josh Jackson, the Iowa guy I mentioned before. Tremaine Edmonds, the guy who's, you know, he's a KJ Wright type of guy. If you got Robert Saleh there as your defensive coordinator. And then the Marcus Davenport's probably your top edge guy at this point. Or Calvin Ridley, if you want to go with the smallish talented but also smallish wide receiver.
I don't think they'll do that. The wide receiver's not pressing enough, and they can be happy with Trent Taylor, their smallish slot receiver guy too. So if there's someone there.
Yeah. I'd throw out one more. Connor Williams, the Texas, he's coming in as a left tackle prospect. Some people think he's a guy who kicks into guard. A little bit fringy with the length. I think that was sort of settled at the combine with his measurements. But I think you could play him somewhere else on the line short term and then have him potentially be the heir apparent to Joe Staley.
Okay, and keep in mind, too, though, Trent Brown can also be the heir apparent. He's their right tackle. He's literally the biggest guy in the NFL, and he moves pretty well. I would imagine that would be plan A, is let's see if he can do that. If he can't, we've still got a good right tackle in him. So even though Staley needs replaced at some point, that's not an urgent pressing demand either, because they might already have the replacement.
Yeah. All right. Well, let's give him the corner, the KJ Wright linebacker or the high upside boomer bust edge rusher.
It's up to you. It really is.
Oh, it's up to me?
It's up to you. Yeah, because I think it's the best of those three guys.
I thought you run the war room in this.
I'm the scouting
director.
Go the edge rusher. Go the edge rusher.
Okay.
You never have too many of them. And all those D linemen have had two of them, Buckner and especially Armstead. Well, yeah. I don't think Buckner's been hurt. Armstead's had some durability issues. Go the edge rusher.
Okay, we're getting Marcus Davenport, the Texas San Antonio edge rusher, who he just shot up draft boards. Everyone seems to think he is an absolute lock for the top half of the first round at this point. So we'll see. That's it. That's our top nine. Just recapping really quick. We'll have three more in this series, but top nine here: Browns take Darnold, Giants take Bradley Chubb, Jets take Josh Allen, Browns at four take Saquon Barkley, Broncos take Josh Rosen, Colts take Roquan Smith, the Georgia linebacker, Bucks take Alabama safety Minkah Fitzpatrick, Bears take Notre Dame guard Quentin Nelson, and the 49ers take UTSA edge rusher Marcus Davenport. Next eight picks coming up. next week. How do you feel about this so far, Andy?
It's all right. We spent more time on this than the actual first eight picks in the draft are going to take, though.
That is true.
Draft will be further along than however far along our show is right now.
But when you factor in all the negotiations for Odell Beckham Jr., I think we're right around the same amount of time everyone's putting into
there. Is some good stuff there. One last note, because you brought up Beckham.
Yes.
If he gets traded, it'd be unprecedented. I know some people are saying, well, Randy Moss got traded to the Patriots, and then look what he did. Randy Moss looked old and washed up in Oakland those 2 years before he got dealt. They wound up going for a fourth-round pick. So if Beckham goes, I don't think we will ever have seen such a dominant, lucrative type of trade, dominant player, lucrative trade for a guy in this point of his career. Not an offensive weapon.
Yeah.
Have the people tweet us, too. Who's been the biggest trade? Herschel Walker, maybe?
I was going to say. Yeah.
Yeah. It doesn't happen. That was 20-something years ago. It's very rare.
It
would be almost uncharted territory if Beckham gets dealt.
It's going to be an interesting color. It's just like the NBA now. That's what we have now. It's just like the NBA, all these trades. We covered
and isn't
NBA,
it nice
Andy.
That the players aren't colluding on their own and just joining up to two or three teams and making the rest of the league irrelevant?
As far as we know.
Yeah, I guess Beckham did talk to those. Yeah. He talked to the Rams guys, right? But the nice thing is, and maybe this is anti-labor statement, the nice thing is when Beckham talks to Rams players and they say, oh, it'd be great to play together, that's all it is. It doesn't actually matter. These guys have zero power in making something like that happen. The decision makers do.
That is a little cynical.
You know what, though? The benefit, it's a 32-team league versus the NBA, which is probably about a 5-team league.
Yeah. Yeah.
NBA I wasted time I wasted watching the NBA playoffs right before Durant just goes and joins the enemy anyway.
We can still watch the NBA finals, see if something happens, see if someone turns an ankle.
Yeah.
Serious
injury Kevin Love gets for a while, and then are they better or worse without him? Yeah, that's what the NBA Finals has boiled down to.
Yeah. Well, if you want NBA breakdown, probably go to the Open Floor podcast. But that's gonna do it for us this week. Thanks, as always, to producers Shelby Royson and Lou Pellegrino, as well as editor Chris Basil, the team at Cadence 13 who makes it sound so good. Thank you to our sponsors, 4hymns.com and Mattress Firm. Please support them the way they support our show. But most of all, thank you to you guys for listening to this episode of the MMPB 10 Things podcast. You really are the best. We'll have a mailbag show probably that first one in May after the draft wraps up. So keep questions coming, or if you have any comments or anything, talkback@themmqb.com or Andy and I both on Twitter, Andy_Benoit, GGramley_SI, or we are both on Facebook. Or if you just want to say hi, we're social people. That's why we're on social media. Remember to listen and subscribe to new and archived episodes of the MMQB podcast with Albert Breer, the MMQB podcast with Peter King, and this podcast, the MMQB 10 Things podcast, wherever you listen to podcasts, including the MMQB.com, SI.com, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Stitcher, TuneIn, and other podcast providers. We will see you guys part two of the mock draft series next week. As regulation has officially expired on our podcast and there's no overtime in sight, I'll spare you the agony of more sports jokes. However, nothing hits the spot like some shut-eye after playing or attending a sporting event, and we think the same goes for listening to us talk about it. So let Mattress Firm help you drift off to dreamland. Simply put, your budget stretches further at Mattress Firm. Head to mattressfirm.com/podcast to learn how you can turn your sleep into a true slam dunk.
Tip of the hat to Albert, another strong edition of MMQB. Did you know your favorite team has a daily podcast on the Locked On Podcast Network? Steelers fans, we have you covered with Locked On Steelers. Cowboys fans, it's Locked On Cowboys. And Chiefs fans, it's Locked On Chiefs. You get the picture. Search Locked On, your favorite team. Search on Apple Podcasts or Google Podcasts for Locked On, your favorite team. Or tell your smart speaker to play podcasts Locked On, your favorite team. Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.